Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. We've had a couple weeks off, life's been a bit busy, but we're going to dive in and chat about what we've been up to in those 2 weeks in terms of what we've been watching, what film festivals we've gone to, and how life's just got a little bit crazy. But Dallas, welcome back. It's good to be talking with you again.
I know, it didn't look that way in a couple of weeks ago, did it?
No, I suppose the joy of remotely recording this podcast means I don't have to worry about being infected by you, I guess.
Yes, no, that's true, because despite being double vaccinated, you let your guard down for one weekend, you catch up with your friends for the first time in 2 years, and then, yeah, there's a COVID outbreak at a friend's stag do, which then wipes you out for 2 weeks. If anyone says COVID is over, it's not. And I don't think anyone can say that a 33% success rate in terms of COVID at a stag do with about 8 out of 20 people, nothing to write home about in terms of that. So it's very real, as I found out.
How has it been? Like, it's obviously one of those ones that you, when you can isolate, people think, obviously it wipes you out. But has it been an opportunity to like go, right, I'm going to dive into a load of books or films? Have you had the energy to even do something like that?
I thought it was going to be that, to be honest. It started off with mild cold-like symptoms. So I thought, oh, I can catch up on some TV shows, some Netflix, Toronto Film Festival is coming up. That's great. To be honest, I didn't watch as much as I thought I was. I just was completely wiped out by it. Just slept a lot. So I did start reading the Gibbiotech book, which arrived. So that was by Michael Leader and Jake Cunningham, who do the Gibbiotech podcast. If the publishers of that need a book on the A24 films, we're right here. So I read a bit of that, watched some Celebrity MasterChef, and that kind of thing was about all that my mind could really do. I did try to do as much as I could in the Toronto Film Festival, but I mean, we'll come on to that in a bit. But it's safe to say it was not what was built when I applied for it. I think it's safe to say. But I'm out on the other side now. I got out a couple of days ago out of self-isolation, so managed to make a trip to the cinema to see a new film, one which everyone had been raving about for different reasons. And thankfully made it in unspoiled, but we've both seen that one, so we can chat about it as well. But yeah, it was nice to be back in my home away from home.
Absolutely, yeah. So we'll kind of dive into a couple of, it's been a few weeks, it feels like not much has been out at the cinema, but there's been a couple of big releases in during our little gap since Candyman came out. But you know, before we dive into that, what was Toronto like? I suppose it, for me, I kind of always expected this situation to come where as cinemas open back up again, that there would be this, you know, we've seen screeners sometimes continue on for some films for critics and writers, etc. But you know, these film festivals last year, where it was all virtual and digital, seems, you know, we got a hint of that at Edinburgh Film Festival, where certain films were not being even shown digitally, or they were a real challenge to see, or you could only see it in the cinema. It sounds like that's extended to Toronto as well.
Yes, it has. I mean, Edinburgh was a weird one in that the two main releases, one of which we'll talk about later, Annette, was not available on the P&I platform, the virtual one. But I don't know anyone who had any trouble in emailing the distributor to get a screening link for it, which, you know, almost negates the fact of why didn't you have it on the P&I screen. So, I mean, for me, Sundance earlier this year is still the gold standard of virtual film festivals. Obviously, London, you know, I think was the first major one that we both experienced last year, which was still very good, you know, although there was some issues with that one in terms of very strict time windows. Sundance, everything was 72 hours, everything was captioned, and there was no geo-locking on it. Obviously, now that film festivals and cinemas are reopening, there is a lot more rollback in terms of distributors looking to get people to come into the cinema to see things. But when I applied for Toronto, it was like the one major film festival, which I still hadn't been able to cover in any form whatsoever. And I'd heard great things about it last year, and they were actively accepting, you know, international applications to cover it digitally, which was great. And then they announced the lineup, and it was fair to say, I mean, I never expected June to have a virtual screening. I mean, that was, it's never on the cards, but it has to be said that the what we were initially gifted with was less than I thought. You know, there was the likes of Last Night in Soho, Spencer and stuff like that didn't have digital screenings. At one point, I think what, not really upset me, I mean, it's a well, first world problems in the end of it, you know, you're not being able to watch certain films ahead of, you know, other people, but certain films like Celine Sciamma's Petite Maman, The Power of the Dog by Jane Campion and stuff were initially on the platform as being available to international audiences. Then about 2 days before the festival started, they disappeared and you could only see them in Canada or the US. And it just felt like the goalposts shifted quite dramatically in the week. I mean, technically, I believe the week in the run-up to Toronto was basically when the London Film Festival announced their programme. So I expect that probably had a lot to do with it, and the fact that they were probably wanting to save the press screenings for the London Film Festival, which is, you know, the distributors, right? You know, it did feel like, you know, you take time off, you know, obviously I had a lot more time off because I had COVID in the end, but you spend time plotting out a schedule of what you're going to watch, and then, you know, that's kind of out the window. And certainly I know for people who were getting sort of paid commissions and stuff like that, they found it incredibly frustrating that, you know, these opportunities were then suddenly removed because they weren't able to watch them. In the end, I think I probably watched about 7 or 8 films. In the end, obviously, if I wasn't as wiped as I was, I probably would have watched more, but I don't think I saw anything, you know, 5-star worthy. I mean, there's a few good films, some which will be coming to the London Film Festival. I mean, I could highly recommend The Rescue, which is a documentary by the team behind Free Solo. It was about the true story of the youth football team in Thailand who got stuck in the flooded cave system for about 14 days, and about the rescue of it. And even though you kind of knew the story and knew that, you know, spoiler, they all escaped safely, a really good documentary, a really good film, such as like Apollo 13 or something like that, is able to make you suspend your disbelief and make you doubt that the ending is going to happen. It's like, how are they actually going to be able to, it draws you in. So it was really good. So a couple of other films, The Guilty, which is out on Netflix next month, is a remake of the Danish sort of potboiler thriller about a police officer who's manning the 911 emergency response line and gets drawn into a case, and it all takes place in one room, one location. If you've seen the Danish one, it's not going to add anything new. It's pretty much beat for beat. But if you haven't, then it's still worth a watch due to the performances. A few other films that came out that I've still got to get around to reviewing. But, I mean, it was nice to see things. I guess when you're not able to catch the big films that you were planning on, it does force you to just stick on other things. And hopefully you will find the odd hidden gem, something like an Indian film called Dug Dug, which was actually really good. It's about this local drunk who has a motorbike and basically gets involved in an accident and dies, but his motorbike keeps mysteriously appearing at the side of the road next to a big billboard, and the people believe it's his spirit is trying to tell them something. And then it basically becomes this whole thing where this motorbike is essentially turned into this giant capitalist idea of people trying to make money by, you know, pretending it's this, you know, spiritual deity that people come to pray on and make money and get a better life of. And it's like, it's quite a fun sort of thing about looking at about faith and versus capitalism and stuff like that. So there was the odd gem there, but I mean, I really wish I could have seen something along the lines of Spencer and stuff like that, which after, you know, hearing all the raves coming out of Venice, but London Film Festival's coming up, but unfortunately I think I'm still too wiped to attempt the odd 12-hour day at London Film Festival. So I think I will be having to make do with whatever stuff makes it onto the digital platform, and I might get through for the screening days in Glasgow. But yeah, unfortunately, Aberdeen does not have the London Film Festival, and I'm pretty sure it's because of Bond. Much to the reason why London Film Festival is not at Leicester Square this October, because Bond is playing in every single mainstream cinema and they don't want to give up the screens when they need bums on seats, given that the year they had. I can understand it. But yeah, I know Filmhouse are screening a lot of the gala presentations at Filmhouse and GFT. It would have been nice if they'd been at the Belmont as well, so I would have been able to catch more of them. But I just can't afford to go down to Glasgow every single day for those ones. But a lot of them are out by the end of October, so it's fine. Other ones I will have to wait a little bit longer. But certainly, I know in terms of the A24 project, I'll have to use my persuasive skills to try and get some screeners for that, because there's at least 3 or 4, I think, at London Film Festival coming up. So we will have a lot of content for you on the A24 project, hopefully by the end of the year.
Absolutely. So we touched on it. I think it could be an interesting point to start on. Annette, that was one of the films that only screened at Edinburgh Film Festival in the cinema, but it was pretty easy to get access to a screener from the generous people at MUBI. So this is a film that has been a one train hype machine in a multiple ways since it kind of broke at Cannes, with a lot of kind of reviews and reactions kind of being in the WTF kind of camp. I mean, I remember just hearing a couple words at the beginning about like this weird baby, oral sex singing, and I was like, I'm sold, I need to see this in the cinema. And I know it had some mixed reaction, but I always felt like the reaction was so mixed, and you know, people saying, oh, it's a bit difficult to watch or engage with that. I felt that if I really wanted to commit to it, that I had to watch this film in a cinema, even if I wasn't too hyped for it. And you know, we obviously were lucky enough to speak to the Sparks Brothers, the band Sparks from the movie The Sparks Brothers, Ron and Russell Mail, and kind of May. So it's been kind of an interesting kind of year for them. So they were the writers of this film. What did you make of Annette? Were you on the I liked it or hated it camp?
I liked it. It took me a while. I think my opinion would have been very different if I hadn't seen the Sparks Brothers documentary and had familiarized myself with Sparks, because watching Annette, it was quite clear to me that this is exactly the kind of musical that Sparks would write. I think if I wasn't a fan of Sparks, I might not have got on board with it as quickly. But I certainly found some of the songs really good. I thought Adam Driver was fantastic in it. It does go to some places that I wasn't expecting, especially considering the marketing of it. It does indeed have the weirdest baby probably to feature since. It felt like a combination of the American Sniper baby and CGI baby Renesmee from Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. But yeah, no, I really dug it and actually really got into it by the end. Yeah, I think it is a very divisive one. It's almost at times one of those sort of sung spoken musicals where it's almost everything is a musical track, but I really kind of dug it. I dug the story, and yeah, it goes to some very weird places. But yeah, no, overall, I was in the pro Annette camp, I think. What about yourself?
I think I was a bit more down the middle. I really respected it and admired it. Like, you watch so many films where you're like, oh, okay, fair enough, you know. And this, it took a little while to warm up, but the more I think about it, I really respect it as a piece of filmmaking and acting, where you just watch and you go, I've not really seen anything else like this. I mean, that doesn't necessarily make it good or bad, but as an experience, it was quite rare. Like, I just, you know, there's a bit where I think there was a tweet that just made me chuckle last week, where it was like, I think the best supporting actor deserves to go to the guy that says at the Super Bowl halftime show, after all, baby Annette is a baby. And it's just one of those things, like, it's just like, even having watched the Sparks Brothers documentary, having both of us be lucky enough to even just interview them for a few minutes, I didn't anticipate this was going to be the film that the Sparks would create. And I think that's a testament to them. Like, it is just so bizarre and so surreal that I really want like an audio commentary. I want a new Sparks Brothers documentary where it's like all about the making of Annette, and because they touch about it on a little bit in the documentary, but not much. But I would love to know how they developed this idea, where that kernel began, and what was going through their head when they came up with some of the certain ideas, or the baby and the design. It's just a really admirable film, and I just have a lot of respect for everyone involved in it, even if I didn't think it was a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, did you see Holy Motors several years ago?
It's one of those films that's been a missing thing for me. I've never got round to it. It's been on a watch list for forever.
Yeah, no, I saw that one, and it was a very sort of divisive film, and was a film of sort of different segments and different parts, and not all of them worked, but certain ones did. And you can definitely see. I mean, yeah, it's Leo Carax who was the director of this film, based on the screenplay and songs by Sparks. And yeah, I think those two creative forces together have produced something incredibly unique and special. And I think it almost needs to be praised for not conforming into what most people would expect from a Hollywood musical. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but I think there will be some people that really, really dig it. And I certainly know that Now Can We Start has been going around in my head intermittently for the last month or so.
Yeah, I think it's crazy to think that only like a couple weeks ago we got a new Marvel movie, and I think it's, whether you're a fan or not, it's been a huge success in terms of box office and showing that people are willing to go along to the cinema. You know, we've seen the success or the detriment to some of the box office numbers with things like Marvel releasing sort of day and date releases of things like Black Widow, for example, on the same day on Disney Plus as in the cinema. So what did you make out of Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings? That must have been one of your last films before you were confined home, I guess.
Yes, it was. I'd actually managed to catch an early morning screening before going to the Stag Do, and I'm pretty glad that I did. I mean, I wasn't too familiar with the character myself. I hadn't really read any other comics and stuff like that, but I was glad that, you know, there was an Asian superhero being added into the mix and getting a lead role straight out of the bat. I think it was... I enjoyed it actually quite a lot. I think the opening sequence with Tony Leung was fantastic. I think, I've been a huge fan of his ever since In the Mood for Love in 2000, and then sort of like Infernal Affairs 2003 and stuff like that. He was sort of one of the major faces of Asian cinema when I sort of got into that, when the Belmont sort of opened in Aberdeen in 2000. So yeah, it was great to see him in it. I hope a lot of people seek out his back catalogue based on this. One thing I wasn't expecting the Marvel Cinematic Universe to be was sexy, but that opening sequence where he's battling the woman who's guarding the secret town, and they sort of use the wushu fighting sort of style, the sexual tension between those two was just flying off the screen. It was like, ooh, damn, I was not expecting that. But then it sort of gets more into a sort of American style. I know that fight choreographer Brad Allen sadly passed away recently, but I mean, I think his work on the film was fantastic, especially that sort of opening sort of bus sequence in San Francisco. I think it was fantastic. I think overall, I mean, did it add anything new to the mythology? Again, it's sort of introducing the characters, setting it all up, prepping you for more adventures where they're going to meet and interact with new different characters. I think, you know, it was a passable job. It's probably, say, sort of 3 out of 5. I think the fight scenes were probably some of the strongest out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Again, it probably goes too far into the sort of CGI blue versus orange lights in the sky sort of thing towards the end. I probably could have done without the return of a certain character. I think maybe one scene would have been enough. I mean, I expect for some people who hadn't seen the Marvel one shot, which appeared on one of the Blu-rays or whatever it was a few years ago might be surprised to see someone turn up, but I could have potentially done without it. I think that joke wore rather thin rather quickly. But overall, I enjoyed it. And it starts to feel like Marvel are taking a little bit more of a risk and maybe taking slightly more chances again with some of the storytelling and characters. Obviously, Black Widow was just sort of giving Scarlett Johansson, you know, her one-off, even though it probably would have come before, better to come before the character was still, you know, not dead, but never mind. But I think with the Eternals coming out and whatever the hell Spider-Man No Way Home is going to be, yeah, I'm still excited to see what comes out. But am I as enthused as I was, you know, after sort of the double bill of Infinity War and Endgame? Potentially not. I think they've still got a lot of work to do. I'm more interested, I think, in other sort of cinematic blockbuster titles and on the big screen that have to do with, you know, spice and stuff like that. What about yourself?
I didn't particularly like it. I mean, I was fine. I've not really been too...
There's never a more damning word of describing a film than fine, is there? Fine. Three out of five.
I think the problem that I've had with it is, like, I watched it on a Friday afternoon. I finished work early. It's like, oh, I'm going to go to the cinema before I have a bit of a leave and do. And then I kind of went along and I was just like, oh, that was fine. You know, I liked Aquafina. I thought she was excellent in it. I know she can be a bit hit or miss in some films. The place that they worked reminded me, it was the Fairmont Hotel, which I was in like 7 years ago today, pretty much. And it's got the best tiki bar in the world. So if you ever want to like go along to Shang-Chi's like workplace, get along there and get a couple of their zombie cocktails. I remember having quite a few of them and falling asleep on the San Francisco Underground afterwards. But, you know, when you come away from a film like that and you're thinking about your holiday that you've been on 7 years ago, it's a bit bad. And I think the problem I have with it is, like, it is a fine enough movie. It's competently made. Nothing overly original. I think, ultimately, Shang-Chi is not the most charismatic character in the world compared to, you know, when you're sort of in the same room as someone like Awkwafina, who just naturally dominates it. You know, it's very difficult. And I just found out when I was like, I came away and just as the days kind of passed, I was like, I'd forgotten about so much of the movie or things that just didn't stand out whatsoever. And it would just ultimately prove to be a pretty disappointing fare. And it was just like, I quite liked Ben Kingsley a bit more than you. I think I enjoyed that. But overall, it was one of those movies I was like, ugh, whatever, you know. I'm looking forward to Spider-Man, but, you know, I think I'm a bit done really now with the Marvel movies. It's just a case of an obligation more than enthusiasm at this stage.
Yeah, I think the issue, a couple of issues that I have at the moment is, they've got Eternals coming up, which, you know, these mythical superhero beings who've been around for 4,000 years but are now basically forced into spending a lot of the time of the trailers into answering the question of why have you never appeared before? Why did you not help out when Thanos was around? It was like, oh, we were only allowed to be involved with certain elemental, you know, mythical beasts which come to the... We're only allowed to, you know, fight those. We're not allowed to do anything else. And then you do have that, you know... Where's Poochie syndrome, where, you know, there are other Avengers around. No one thought to give this young kid a helping hand in his first battle, you know. And, you know, as much as I appreciate a complex, layered villain like Wenwu, not the Mandarin, but Wenwu, who is basically somehow his mind corrupted to believe that his wife is being held captive behind these gates, and that's what he's trying to do. You know, Thanos, from a certain point of view, he had some good points. Loki has become more of an anti-hero these days. I just kind of looking back for, you know, the good old days of, you know, just a villain who is just properly villainous. And I guess maybe we'll get that in a couple of weeks when Woody Harrelson is Carnage in Venom, Let There Be Carnage. You know, hopefully with, well, he still doesn't have a decent haircut in those movies, but I guess we'll have to see. I'm sure he'll be chewing scenery, something rotten in that. But yeah, just be, let's have a bad guy who's bad for being bad's sake. Don't give him a tortured backstory. You know, let's be someone who's properly vicious and mean. That's what I would like to see. But yeah, I mean, they are what they are, and yeah, they will always do well. But I think, yeah, there's, again, they were just maybe just a little bit bogged down in having to set up a whole new world again. Not anything to do with Disney, but a whole new side of the movie. And even, but it's set in San Francisco, and everyone knows that Scott Lang's Ant-Man hangs out in San Francisco. Where was Ant-Man, you know? Everyone needs to know where Ant-Man is. It's the new Poochie.
Well, talking about vicious and angry, Malignant, it seems to be the film that's come out of nowhere, really, and everyone seems to be seeking out in the cinema, or I think it's HBO Max in America. So the latest movie from James Wan, as he sort of returns back to his directing roots in horror, with a story about Madison, who is paralyzed by shocking visions of grisly murders, and her torment worsens as she discovers that these waking dreams are in fact terrifying realities. So based on a story from the from James Wan's wife, what did you make of Malignant? I know it's one of these ones, it's splitting some opinion, but what did you think?
I had seen the trailer and had planned to go see it before I got COVID, but then there was a lot of buzz opening weekend here in the UK of film Twitter were going crazy for it. So you've got to go see Malignant. It's absolutely wild. It's absolutely crazy. Some people... It was like there was a lot of I think it was Matthew Turner had sort of said it's simultaneously 1 star awful yet 5 stars amazing, so therefore it came to a 3-star review, and I can see both points. Yeah, there's probably elements of it which are not very good. Maybe some of the dialogue is a bit pointed and on the nose. I know that people basically said, you've got to go see this before it gets spoiled for you, and so I did, and I have to say, I'm not sure how you felt about this when you went to see it, but for me, the twist, as it was painfully obvious from the opening, so at the end of the opening sequence and indeed the opening credits. There was a lot of hints as to what was actually going on. But what I do have to admire is its commitment to following that through into a rather wild, crazy third act. I'm not going to say any more about it because I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I think if you mention any particular movie, then people will automatically have ideas in their heads. But I mean, I'm not sure if you picked this up, but there was one specific musical cue in the score that is a very pointed reference to another film, which basically has a very similar plot. So I don't know if you picked up a certain... song that had been worked into.
And as a Pixies fan, it was interesting. I'd love to know about the rights issue behind that choice, but yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. I mean, it was, I think Matthew Turner probably nailed it there. It's like this 1-star movie, but it's 5-star nuts maybe towards the end of the movie, and I just found it's not my style of movie at all, to be honest. I like the original Saw. I watched a documentary about it the other day, and sort of talking about the style of it and how it all came around. And, you know, James Wan did something really interesting with that. Whereas that kind of style really appealed to me when I was like a teenage boy. Whereas I was kind of watching this and was going, it's just a bit much and it's quite intense. And like, I couldn't work out what was going on at points. And it was just like, it just felt like a film that it wasn't really for me. But I watched it and I thought, okay, that's fine enough and interesting choices, and you know, it's certainly bold and I respect it, but it wasn't really my cup of tea. But I'm never really in the can for horror films.
No, I'm very keen to get Kim's thoughts on it when she sees it. But I mean, for me, it touches on so many different sort of horror elements. You've got sort of like this, what is domestic horror, you've got, you know, the sort of being psychically linked with a serial killer. You've got giallo elements with the sort of the long black trench coats, the black leather gloves and stuff like this. And then you've got sort of body horror elements. And yeah, I mean, not all of it works, but it knows what it is and pitches itself to, I think, just about the right level that it totally worked for me. It will not work for everyone. It is very, it does feel like a sort of mid to late 90s sort of horror film where, yeah, and as we said, that, yeah, James Wan has certainly come a long way since the original Saw, and in certain terms of like a chase scene or something is much more elaborate and well thought out than the car chase from the first original Saw, which if anyone can remember, that was basically just shaky cam footage of two people behind a steering wheel, not even showing the car because they didn't have the budget. So he's come a long way, and you know, hats off to him for taking a break from in between Aquaman films to create something which is, you know, completely wild and out there. And, you know, if it gets people in who have watched Aquaman to see what he did next, all credit to him, I say, and his wife for coming up with such a bizarre and crazy concept in the first place.
So is there anything else that you've seen that you want to give a wee shout out to during your period of isolation?
I think that's about it, to be honest. Those were the main ones. It was just basically catching up on my Celebrity MasterChef and then also getting, sadly, getting hooked into Married at First Sight UK as well.
Oh, gosh. it's definitely had a knock-on effect, maybe your breathing and to also your mental capacity
exactly,
to make
yes.
decisions.
I'm looking forward to getting back into the summer to seeing proper films so I can stop watching terrible reality television.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back soon to talk about film with everyone, and hopefully we'll all be fine fit. And if you haven't had your vaccination yet, go get one. And if you've been double vaccinated, stay safe. It can easily happen to you too. So take care. Bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.